Okay, welcome to our debate today. We're going to have a debate on whether a Mormon should be a conservative, a liberal, or a libertarian. And we thought this was a good year to do something like this because with Mitt Romney running for president, that and with having who's a Republican and having a Democrat as the majority leader in the Senate, and one's a Republican, one's a Democrat, it was a good time to talk about Mormon politics and find out if Mormons are lemmings or if they think for themselves. So today we're going to have it's going to be a formal debate. They're each going to get the same amount of time for their presentation, for their rebuttal, and then we'll have 10 minutes of Q&A, and you can step right to the microphone there in the center aisle to ask your questions. We'll have questions for 10 minutes, and then we'll go back to hear their closing remarks. So let's go ahead and start. Each of them is going to take 1 minute to introduce himself, and then we'll start the debate. So we'll start here with Paul Merrill.
Thanks for that applause. I appreciate that.
We're waiting for what you say.
Now you're talking. I am Paul Merrill. I'm president of a state-based think tank out of Salt Lake City called Sutherland Institute. And we just deal with stuff inside the state. And previously, I worked at a think tank in Northern Illinois called the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society. And is something wrong?
No.
Oh, okay. I see Mark. You know what? When the big dog is wagging his head, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Are there new instructions?
Well, remember how you were going to introduce yourself.
I will.
Okay. We'll see. So just.
I will.
Just pipe down.
So just be patient, my friend.
It's written all over your face.
Seriously. So let me begin. For Mark, I'm a conservative because I'm a Latter-day Saint. Authentic conservatism assures mankind that rights and responsibilities by their very natures are always in conflict, and it provides a reasonable way for free men to justly and peaceably resolve the two. It does so through a certain moral ecology, the inherent universality of the human person. In other words, a reasonable understanding of what it means to be a human being. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints adheres to its own moral ecology. Human life is defined, purposeful, and ordered. Justification for any human action is based on that action's accurate reflection of the human identity, that is, outward expressions of inherited traits as a literal child of God. And man's happiness is largely dependent upon free will choices that either conform to God's will or not. The LDS Church's Family Proclamation, issued in 1995, provides a wonderful summary of its moral ecology, and from it we may begin to compile a list of basic goods to help us understand what it means to be a human being on the road to discovering the true meaning of freedom. Human beings are literal children of God with an inherited nature and characteristics. Human beings are gender-specific, procreative, and they have a physical body integrated with the human spirit to constitute the human person. Human beings are divinely patterned with an inherent social structure, meaning for Latter-day Saints, family's the fundamental unit of society, not the individual, not the church, not the corporation, and certainly not the state. This understanding testifies that our liberty in a free society is tied to the moral recognition and behavioral reflection of what it really means to be a human being. Liberty in this sense means conforming human action to this set of basic goods regarding human identity and purpose. And slavery then means any human action that distances a person from this identity and purpose. For Latter-day Saints, there is no such thing as free agency. There's only moral agency to choose to conform to this divine identity and purpose or not. For skeptics who point out the obvious, that the world is diverse and not all Mormon, Latter-day Saints and conservatives fall back on natural law, as did our founding fathers. Just like the construct of the LDS gospel, natural law maintains that a moral order exists and that it is readily identifiable by reasonable human beings. Natural law is the basis of American liberty. And not coincidentally, natural law conforms perfectly to the refined doctrines of Latter-day Saints. Call it God or nature's God, it's the same thing. Our very freedom as Americans, written into our founding documents, is based on principles we put into practice regarding what we ought to do, derived from an inherited identity and purpose. From the Declaration of Independence, we read how our founding fathers viewed their mortal existence, that truth exists, that these truths are self-evident and obvious in the nature and character of our personhood, that all human beings have inherited attributes endowed by their Creator, such as a body of flesh and bones, life, the power to choose, liberty, and a clear idea of the object of our choices, the pursuit of happiness. We also read that government is an expression and extension of human nature and experience, and that man is expected to exercise his personal liberty to harmonize his government to his inherent identity and purpose. And lastly, that complementing that identity and purpose is the ultimate end of his government. For Latter-day Saints, the image of God is the thread of life for how all of his children are organized in mortality. Acting individually in this fallen world, the image of God is personified by the life and teachings of his beloved Son, Jesus Christ. The Son of God is man's example as to how we ought to think, feel, and act. His exemplary life is what man ought to imitate. His personal example is the way of happiness, precisely because that example, mirroring God the Father, is aligned with the great plan of happiness. In other words, happiness means being aligned with God in thought, purpose, and action. Latter-day Saints can identify with Lord John Acton's statement that, quote, "Liberty is not the power of doing what we like, but the right of being able to do what we ought." For Latter-day Saints and conservatives alike, governments exist to protect the right of being able to do what we ought. In the LDS Doctrine and Covenants, it reads, "Abide ye in the liberty wherewith ye are made free." Latter-day Saints know the qualitative difference between liberty and freedom, unlike Judge Napolitano. And we also know that personal choice is a continuous exercise in choosing to conform to our divine identity and purpose or not, and that choice is a means to happiness, not an end in itself. That knowledge is the intersection of Mormonism and conservatism. For Latter-day Saints, freedom and human happiness are synonymous. Human happiness is the end game, not individual liberty, and our governments exist to wisely and prudently assist us in that pursuit. I am a conservative because I am a Latter-day Saint. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Connor Boyack.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming. My name is Connor Boyack. I'm 30 years old, which is a question I'm often asked, so throw that out there. Until recently, I was the director of the Utah 10th Amendment Center, local state chapter for a national organization. Some of you may have seen their documentary Nullification here. Great organization. As of last week, I'm now the president of a libertarian public policy organization in Utah called Libertas Institute. I'm also the author of Latter-day Liberty, a gospel approach to government and politics, my humble attempt to demonstrate in a book what I have to now consolidate into 6 minutes, which is quite an arduous task, and that is the intersection of Mormonism and, as it's generally known and often misinterpreted, libertarianism. And just as a quick plug, I'll be doing a book signing at 6:45 tonight over in the laissez-faire booth. In a revelation given to the early Latter-day Saints in 1831, God told his followers to be subject to the powers that be until he reigns whose right it is to reign. Similar counsel for Christian conduct is found in the New Testament when Jesus told his disciples to render unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's. The question politically minded Christians must ask is, what belongs to Caesar? If we are to be subject to the powers that be, then which powers are legitimate and worthy of our support? Other scriptures in our faith offer an answer. For example, in section 134 of Doctrine and Covenants, it states that we believe that all men are bound to sustain and uphold the respective governments in which they reside while protected in their inherent and inalienable rights by the laws of such governments. This important qualifier suggests that legitimate government powers, or Caesar, must be restrained such that the individual rights of each person are properly protected, and only then is such government worthy of our complete allegiance. Similarly, one of our church's articles of faith stipulates that Latter-day Saints, quote, believe in being subject to kings, presidents, rulers, and magistrates, in obeying, honoring, and sustaining the law, end quote. This statement of submission to political authority is often misinterpreted to argue that Mormons must subject themselves to political rulers and the laws of government unconditionally. The actual statement only says, however, that we are subject to such rulers in their obeying, honoring, and sustaining the law. The obligation to be subject to the powers that be requires that those powers be legitimate and lawful. If Latter-day Saints are obligated to support the existing political system inasmuch as that system obeys, honors, and sustains the law, then what is true law? In a theocratic system, the law is, of course, whatever God says it is. As our lawgiver, he is free to create and enforce whatever laws he will and for whatever reason. But until Christ reigns and comes, and while we are subject to the powers that be, as we've been told, the law necessarily takes a different shape. Left to govern ourselves, the law becomes, as Frederick Bastiat said, nothing more than the collective organization of the individual right to self-defense, to lawful defense, excuse me. Man-made government's only legitimate role in our lives thus becomes the defense against aggression upon our persons and property. All other additions to government's role and authority are illegitimate usurpations and a deviation from the underlying natural law that justifies the use of force only as a method to defend against aggression and impose justice. As children of God, we are equals and lack the moral authority to unjustly impose anything upon one another, even and especially righteousness and obedience to God's commandments. Abstention from drugs and alcohol, sexual morality, fidelity in marriage, keeping the Sabbath day holy, these and so many other areas in which the government currently interjects itself may only legitimately be promoted through persuasion. We are to persuade others to follow in Christ's footsteps, not to beat and tax them into compliance. Employing the government to achieve such ends, a stance which is supported by conservatives and liberals alike, requires abandoning true law and violates the inherent and inalienable rights of the affected persons. As our scriptures state, quote, the civil magistrate should restrain crime, but never suppress the freedom of the soul, end quote. This is one of the most significant distinctions between libertarianism and the interventionist political philosophies of conservatism and liberalism. Many libertarians recognize the importance of families, charity, compassion, and equality, but believe that societal ideals such as these may only legitimately and morally be realized through persuasion. This harmonizes closely with God's own pattern for promoting righteousness, as explained in the following quote by one of our faith's leaders, quote, God's chief way of acting is by persuasion and patience and long suffering, not by coercion and stark confrontation. He always acts with unfailing respect for the freedom and independence we possess, end quote. Using the coercive arm of the law to enforce compliance to a moral standard is anathema to the way God himself works. Why then do individuals believe that they can employ such means to realize their desired goals? The end goals of conservatism and liberalism are in many cases important and worthy of our support. What form that support takes, however, is a significant point of contrast whereby libertarianism stands alone in harmony with the gospel of Jesus Christ. The common theme among liberals to feed the hungry, aid the poor, educate the ignorant, and otherwise offer assistance to those in need is something that every Christian has been commanded to do. Realizing those objectives through the state, however, creates a circumstance in which righteous ends are realized through unrighteous means. In other words, liberals endorse the use of coercion as a means to force people into helping their fellow man, confiscating an individual's property through taxation in order to satisfy an apparent need on the part of another person to whom that stolen property is redistributed. By promoting social welfare through government programs, persuasion is abandoned and replaced with force. Of course, nowhere did Jesus state that his commandments to love and serve one another may be fulfilled through force. The opposite is true, and thus the libertarian position of realizing these important goals through peaceful, voluntary, charitable means is supported by Christ's teachings. Similarly, conservatism embraces the fleshy arm of the state to enforce the ends it deems most important, such as with drugs, marriage, obscenity, and other issues relating to morality. While not all libertarians will agree with the importance of abstaining from things that God has forbidden, the political philosophy of libertarianism provides for the most moral method of promoting those societal standards. Whereas conservatism also endorses the use of coercion against those who engage in such activities, libertarianism recognizes that living a life of Christian conduct or simply living a moral life and abstaining from such vices is accomplished through a voluntary adoption of the underlying principles and lifestyle. We cannot and should not force a person to conform their behavior into compliance with God's commandments. Liberty is, in the words of one of Christ's apostles, the privilege to be free and to be unrestrained in all activity except that which interferes with the equally sacred rights of others. And that, in a nutshell, is libertarianism. Thank you.
And now we'll hear from Rory Reed.
Good afternoon. My name's Rory Reed. You heard that. I am the Democrat in the bunch. And my history is I grew up here. I was in local government for a number of years. I was the Democratic nominee for governor of Nevada. The fact that I'm here probably suggests to you that I lost that election, which is true. And I think that Paul and Connor have been very articulate and very polite, and I'm going to try to shake this up a bit because it's starting to sound like a Sunday school class, and I don't think it should. I'm a Democrat because Mormon literature, in my opinion, decries a society in which every man or woman should receive according to their genius or their strength, and it also condemns those who ignore the sick, the needy, and those that have other needs. And I think what Paul said was said very well, but what I'd suggest is that the Republican Party doesn't embody the philosophy that he described for one fundamental reason. In my opinion, the GOP has been disingenuous with America for decades. And let me just give you one example, and going away from my prepared text in order to provoke, the example I would use is that, in my opinion, the Republican Party has been the best developer of political rhetoric of my generation. The problem has been that their actions haven't been driven by that rhetoric. For example, starting with Ronald Reagan in 1980, we have been told by the GOP that the problems with America are caused by its government, by taxes that are too high, regulations that are too burdensome, bureaucracies that are too large, and if we just did away with all that, everything would be better. About the same time that that rhetoric was born with the Reagan campaign, the era of large permanent deficits in America began in 1981. President Reagan believed that if he cut taxes, it would force everyone to reduce domestic spending, but Democrats and Republicans alike continued to spend. And that continued throughout Republican administrations. George W. Bush's administration, Republicans had both houses of Congress. He reduced taxes. He talked about less regulation, but he spent more, not less, on a drug benefit for seniors, on two wars. I could give other examples. So from 1981 to 2009, in my opinion, the accomplishment, the primary accomplishment of the grand old party was not to reduce the size of government, but just to stop paying for it and to borrow money to do so. As a result, the national debt has quadrupled. From the period of 1981 to 1992, it quadrupled. And then from 2001 to 2009, it doubled yet again. So while I can't quibble with Paul's lofty description of Mormon theology, I think that that theology hasn't been embodied by Republicans' disingenuous behavior. I'm sure that will provoke a response from Paul, at least I hope it does. As to what Connor said, my fundamental problem with libertarianism is that libertarians want me to be free so long as I accept their notion of what freedom is. As I understand it, the free market is sacred to a libertarian. Libertarians believe if a thing can't be produced profitably, then it shouldn't be produced at all. These arguments value efficiency above anything else, and I think there are things that have intrinsic value, like justice, and that there are things that are inefficient that any of us would agree are important. And we shouldn't be coerced, in my opinion, to accept that definition of freedom in this country. Further, I would argue that it's not any easier for a libertarian to understand what the original intent of the founders is. I have as much respect for the Constitution as anyone, I hope, and I respect what the founders did, but if any review of history would indicate that they were a contentious lot, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were the result of compromises, and I don't know how anybody can define what their true intent was. What would they really have done if they hadn't had to compromise like they did? And finally, I believe that libertarians want me to risk what I believe to be the best nation in the world's future on an untested political philosophy. I think that libertarians do a really good job of describing an interesting philosophy in a clever way, but I have no idea how that philosophy would be translated to public policy that could govern in a pragmatic way. And there are no examples to shed a light on that for me. There are no libertarian cities, states, or nations. Other philosophies have put their money where their mouths are, risked their lives to develop a society. Our country did that. Israel did that. There's other religious and utopian communities that have been able to take their philosophy from being an interesting topic of conversation to a government. And I do not understand what a libertarian model would be, because there is none, and I don't understand how that transition from where we are today to a libertarian government would take place. So while I agree with my brother's lofty thoughts here, I hope that I antagonize them sufficiently to respond. Thanks.
All right, you guys have done a great job of staying on time. Now I'm going to give you 5 minutes to respond to each other. We'll start with Paul, and then we'll ask questions after that.
I will respond to Rory during my closing 2 minutes, because all I need is one sentence. I'm not a libertarian because I am a Latter-day Saint. I'm not a libertarian because I don't believe in victimless crimes. As a Latter-day Saint, I understand that human actions have both transitive and intransitive effects. If I punch you in the face, clearly there's a transitive result. You feel the pain of my hitting you in the face. There's also an intransitive aspect to that action. My choice to hit you in the face leaves a mark on me, on my character. The intransitive aspect of human action is precisely why any of us question the personal choices of elected officials or any person in a position of trust. Human autonomy is a powerful and important component of human freedom, but the whole idea of a victimless crime begs the question, is a human free in her ability to make reasonable choices if she's addicted to heroin or alcohol or any other substance? And if not free, why are we so self-righteous about protecting her autonomy? Better yet, what autonomy is left to protect? I'm not a libertarian because I don't believe in spontaneous order. As a Latter-day Saint, I believe in a transcendent moral order created by God and in my citizenship endowed by my Creator. There's nothing spontaneous about this moral order. And as a reasonable human being, not an ideologue, I don't confuse natural human associations with spontaneity. That I like vanilla ice cream and you sell vanilla ice cream is hardly a moral order. I am not a libertarian because I don't believe that government is evil or even a necessary evil. As a Latter-day Saint, I understand that governments are instituted of God for the benefit of man and that he holds men accountable for their acts in relation to them, both in making laws and in administering them for the good and safety of society. Government is an integral part and extension of ordered liberty. In fact, limited government is only possible within ordered liberty, where it's integrated and balanced against other influences of civil society. Libertarianism is a fantasy that cannot sustain the realities of limited government. Its delusions of selfish individualism and abstract liberty are insufficient to withstand the pressures of statism. Lastly, I'm not a libertarian because I don't believe that Latter-day Saint prophets and apostles support legalizing drugs, prostitution, pornography, gambling, or same-sex marriage. Nor do I accuse them of being wrong-headed or uninspired in their opposition to those things. As a Latter-day Saint, I understand the difference between legislating morality and legislating immorality, precisely because I understand the proper role of government in the context of ordered liberty. I understand that there's no freedom without a good majority of citizens waking each and every day looking to become their better selves. Freedom requires us to become our better selves, not our selfish selves. Elevating human autonomy above all other influences shaping our lives to become our better selves has the opposite effect. If government, as a legitimate extension of we the people, isn't permitted to play a limited role in encouraging our better selves through law, it will be used to play an expansive role in facilitating the worst about us. Libertarians err in thinking that a free life has neutral corners to which, if all of us would only retreat, we'd live in peace and happiness. As a Latter-day Saint, I know neutral corners do not exist in this life. Governments are instituted of God for precisely this reason. Libertarians have an irrational fear of positive liberty, whereas Latter-day Saints have a healthy respect for it. If our entire view of government is negative liberty, there would be no need for good, honest, and wise leaders as called for in LDS scripture. It is irrational to think that any political philosophy associated with the gospel of Jesus Christ would have at its core the ideological credo of just leave me alone. The late great conservative intellectual Russell Kirk said it best, quote, "We flawed human creatures are sufficiently selfish already without being exhorted to pursue selfishness on principle." I am not a libertarian because I am a Latter-day Saint. Thank you.
So, Rory, do you feel totally marginalized?
No, I'm just looking forward to the last minute of Paul's presentation.
Okay. Oh, that's right. That's right. He's going to get to you in the last part. That's right. He's coming back to you. So, Connor, it sounds like you need to respond.
Anybody want to be in my shoes right now? Before we started this, I was talking to Rory, and we were speculating as to who would receive the brunt of Paul's remarks, and he speculated that he would get a fair share, and I suspected that I would get the brunt of it, and indeed I have. And I look forward to responding. It's a good debate and an important debate to have. It's an interesting one, though, that in many cases, libertarians and conservatives, I find, agree on core fundamentals or the more superficialities. I find that there's a danger in generalizing and conflating. One of the things that I found problematic in Rory's comments was attacking conservatism on the basis of what the Republicans in office have done. If I were a conservative, I would respond and say, well, I don't consider those people in office to be conservatives. They've deviated from conservatism. I find that the same thing happens often in my discourse, which has gone on for months and years with Paul, on conservatism and libertarianism, whereby we are built as libertarians into a straw man of selfish, atheistic, marijuana-smoking, drug-loving, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When in fact, as I am in the unique position of being a faithful, you know, Mormon who objects to all of those vices and attempts to persuade people not to use them, yet consider myself to be libertarian. So I find that the straw men that Paul so often erects are not reflective of what I consider to be liberty. Although liberty is an interesting thing, when Paul talks about liberty and in the past has talked about liberty, I find that we perhaps have different definitions. Paul's is an overarching, in my view, an overarching, comprehensive moral liberty. It encompasses social liberty, religious liberty, political liberty, and in many of those other factors, I agree. We cannot be free if we are in spiritual bondage or financial bondage. Liberty, defined as I understand it from Paul, is a very comprehensive thing. When I talk about liberty, mine is almost strictly political, and I want to use the following quote from Murray Rothbard to suggest why perhaps the different definitions might cause problem in the communication between libertarians and conservatives generally. This is Rothbard. He says, libertarianism per se does not offer a comprehensive way of life or system of ethics as do, say, conservatism or Marxism. This does not mean in any sense that I am opposed to a comprehensive ethical system. Quite the contrary. It simply means that libertarianism is strictly a political philosophy confined to what the use of violence should be in social life. Much of what Paul said in both his introductory remarks and in his rebuttal towards what I say, I agree with. I found it only on select occasions where I happen to strongly disagree, and oftentimes it's these definitions or perhaps perspectives. But libertarianism, from my view, is merely a political philosophy under which people can be free to choose the path of their own life. I am not going to coerce people into following the moral order that both Paul and I really support. My second book coming out later this year is about the responsibilities that we each have to build this order, to adhere to God's commandments, to obtain this bigger picture of freedom by being a responsible and moral people. So I agree that there is a moral order. I agree that happiness is the path that we should pursue, as Paul said. I simply believe that individual liberty is the system under which that happiness can be obtained. Much as the law of consecration, for example, I believe is only most effective and possible under a system of what's generally known as capitalism, whereby people are free to allocate resources and own and manage their property and choose to, you know, divert them over here to a church or to the needy under a system where confiscatory taxation robs a man of his property, he is less free to choose to consecrate. I find the same thing happens with happiness. I am less happy when I am coerced, when I am forced to participate to support a moral order with which I agree and to which I would voluntarily and freely affiliate, even when left unfree to do so. So often, I think that we have kind of different signals. I agree in the moral order that Paul says, but I take solace and comfort and intellectual agreement with the following quote from Neil A. Maxwell, one of the apostles in our church. He says, liberty does not rob order, and order does not mock liberty. I see them as synonymous, whereas I see Paul and other conservatives subjecting one to the other, whereby liberty becomes in bondage, hostage to order. That only when we pursue and have you know, achieved some degree of this moral order that is defined by Latter-day Saints or whomever, can we have liberty? Can we be free? Can we have a government? When in my discussions and questions about this, I try and boil down what is government. Government is the use of force. Therefore, in what cases is force appropriate to use? As we pursue the moral order that we all agree in, that has been revealed of God or that is extant in natural law, what element does force play? I contend that force can only impose justice, defend us against aggression, and on that single basis alone is how I define the political liberty that I fight for, such that people then can be free to choose to pursue happiness and a moral order, or in fact, to choose the alternative. I find liberty in that context to be more fulfilling, allowing me to be free as a Latter-day Saint to choose to follow God, rather than in any fashion, in any system, to be coerced to do so. Thank you.
Good, and now we'll hear from Rory Reed and his follow-up.
Well, I did my best. They were still pretty polite, though, weren't they? I guess that, I want to respond first to what Connor said, that, true conservatives should be taken off the hook if their leaders have somehow betrayed them and done things other than they would want them to do. I think that no elected official deserves that kind of break, and neither do the adherents to any political philosophy. I think that we can sit here all day talking about lofty philosophical matters and in terms of what we think a proper moral order is, we would probably agree, but it gets down to the nitty-gritty of who we're going to elect and which pony we're going to ride. Elections are about a choice, and we make a choice based on what we believe the candidate believes. And I have to say that Paul was pretty sanctimonious in dismissing Connor's irrational beliefs. But the leader of the party that Paul, I assume, adheres to, the nominee or about to be nominee, presumptive nominee of that party, I think the only thing consistent about Mitt Romney is his inconsistency. And I think that if you are speaking about a moral order, you shouldn't be involved with an organization that has historically misrepresented what it will do once elected. And compare that, and I'm not a Ron Paul supporter, but I think Ron Paul has honorably said what he believes to whatever audience is in front of him from the day he decided he wanted to be president. And I think that's meaningful and shouldn't be dismissed out of hand, because he represents a movement. The movement that Paul favors, and he's going to give me a minute later, I want to make it harder for him. They, and if you don't believe me, turn on Fox News 24/7. It's about taxes, the size of bureaucracies in America, the intrusiveness of regulations. And many Republicans have been elected waving that banner. But the facts show that they have misrepresented, either intentionally or not, their intentions. If you talk to the Congressional Budget Office in 2011, the national debt was $14.3 trillion, okay? Of that number, President Obama is responsible for $2.4 trillion, President Clinton, $1.4 trillion, George W. Bush, $6.1 trillion. George H.W. Bush, $1.5 trillion. And Ronald Reagan, $1.9 trillion. That the Republican Party has misrepresented its intentions to the American people. And as an adherent to that philosophy, you should be troubled if you're standing in front of a group of people talking about a moral order when the, I think, most single, most recognizable attribute of your movement is its dishonesty. And I think that stands in stark contrast. Whether or not you agree with a libertarian, they tell you what they think, and that should be appreciated. Now, I think Connor's wrong, but I appreciate that, and it should be respected by all of us. And the fundamental reason I believe Connor's wrong is, and I tried to say it quickly, and I'm running out of time, so I'll try to do it again. With a libertarian, I feel like it's always a debate about what the definition of freedom is. And I just think that the libertarian definition of liberty and freedom involves just as much coercion as any other definition. And that's why I think it's fundamentally flawed as a philosophy. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you very much. We now have 10 minutes for questions. And, oh, would you like to start? We'll go right ahead then.
Step up unless mind. You had a question.
I do, but you go right ahead.
No.
I'll let you go first.
No,
go ahead.
You go first.
This is
all
executive
right,
privilege.
Okay. In Mormon history and theology, there's lots of issues where you could divide that you haven't really discussed. The United Order, which is a form of socialism. Prohibition that most of the Mormon leaders supported. And Utah was famous for its restrictive alcohol laws, so that was not libertarian, I don't think. Sunday closing laws. The welfare system was a rejection of the Democrats' dole system, which you currently have, or maybe it's Republican Democrats together, I don't know. But the church clearly rejects the current welfare system, so I'd like to see Rory Reed comment on that. And then none of you quoted the very libertarian statement.
Are you making statements or are you asking a question?
Yeah.
We only have 10 minutes here.
Or 10 questions in a row.
All right, Joseph Smith, we teach them correct principles and they govern themselves. Is that not ultimately a libertarian statement?
So which one is mine?
Yeah.
You know what, let's go back to my questions because I actually have questions. All right, so Rory, you mentioned in your opening remarks that, and I was moved by this, that you are Democrat because as you read the scriptures, you find that it's about helping the needy, which I think is a lofty goal. So let me ask all three of you, how should a Mormon politician vote on things like healthcare, food stamps, rent subsidies, those kinds of issues? And let's start with Rory, because you brought it up, and then let each of you comment on those.
I think a Mormon elected official should do what they think is right and should understand that their standing as a Mormon has nothing to do with what their vote is. It's a vote of conscience. You know, foundationally, they have a point of view, I'm sure, that has something to do with their faith, you'd hope. But ultimately, the church doesn't direct an elected official to vote a specific way on any of those issues you described. And I have to say that I feel a sense of victory here. You know, this is a debate. I think I won by my mere presence here. I have to tell you that my experience in Mormonville hasn't always been positive as the one of the few Democrats in the crowd. And, you know, being included with these fine gentlemen in a debate gives me a sense of, you know, pride that I've been included as appropriate on the spectrum, and I'm verklempt, so I better turn over the microphone.
Okay, so let me make, just to make this clear, and I think you did make a good point, and that is the church does not direct any politicians, that there's definitely a separation of church and state there, and I want to make that clear. But when I say should, I mean just from your own moral standing and your own understanding of what your choices should be. So let's go ahead and Connor, what would you think that a politician would do in order to provide for the needy?
So the original question, which I want to answer, was how should a Mormon politician vote on these issues? And we need to remember what voting is. Voting is the explicit endorsement of an underlying policy, a policy that is enforced ultimately by government through violence, through confiscatory taxation, through fines, through imprisonment. At the end, if you choose to disobey an illegitimate law, for example, you will be force will be used against you to penalize you. So I disagree slightly, if not fully, to be honest, with what Rory said. Conscience is certainly important, but I don't think that there's that much wiggle room. To the extent that a person is voting for a policy that illegitimately employs the use of force against a person for not giving 20% of their income or what have you to social welfare programs, I find that to be very problematic. I think, for example, in the Book of Mormon, there's two kings who are at polar opposites, one of which is excoriated for being this wicked King Noah, Part of the reason that he was wicked, as it mentions, was a 20%. No, it was a 20% income tax rate, right? 1/5 of everyone's property, and that was one of the things listed, that he was this wicked king, whereas King Benjamin was the voluntary, the servant, the I'm going to work for myself, I'm not going to impose this upon you, this righteous king. Now, of course, that those aren't perfect correlations, but I see them as examples for understanding how the political applications of an underlying Mormon theology might suggest we go about things. We serve, we voluntarily come to the aid of one another, as King Benjamin himself did. We encourage people to impart their substance freely to one another. And so when we say, how should a Mormon vote, it depends on what the underlying policy is, and to the extent that we're coercing people into helping one another, I think the answer is clear that that should be voted down.
Okay. And Paul?
You know, what was just missing from Connor's analysis is the fact that King Benjamin was a king. Okay, he wasn't an elected representative of the people, and yet we sustained him in the Book of Mormon in all righteousness and goodness. And one of our articles of faith that Connor talked about was even sustaining a king. Can you imagine that in this day and age, the Latter-day Saints in this day and age would be required to sustain a king? I can go ahead and I can answer Rory's now.
Sure.
I think.
Go ahead.
I just, you know, when I read Jesus, for instance, saying that we're all to love one another, I can tell you, he didn't mean create a welfare state. Okay, that's not what he meant. He meant for us to love one another and to take care of one another. It doesn't mean create a welfare state. Now, conversely, on the other side of the coin to Connor, it could mean that you create a welfare state. It could mean that. You know, even in The Road to Serfdom, Hayek talked about the necessity of a safety net. Why? Because the overriding objective is freedom. Again, it's not individual liberty. It's freedom. That's the overriding objective in maintaining a free society, that we all have a responsibility in a free society as freedom-loving people to protect. And you do what it takes.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and take a question from the audience.
No, I don't think so. First, I find that at least of two parties there, there's an extremely superficial understanding of libertarianism, and what superficial understanding there was misguided. There's nothing in libertarian philosophy that wants people to be immoral, and there's at least as many immoral conservatives and liberals as there are anybody running around doing what you don't want to happen. My question, integrity is following your principles, acting in concert with your principles, and certainly abiding by your agreements. I've asked this of many folks of Christian faith, and there's just 10 commandments. One of them says, thou shalt not steal. Period. I'm asking you, where is the fine print on the back that says, unless there's majority vote, unless it's for the poor, unless it's for the kids?
Each of you can take 30 seconds to answer that, and then we're going to have to go to your rebuttals because our time's almost up.
That's fine. Let me finish the Hayek thought about the safety net. You have a safety net in society so that you don't have revolution, so that the have-nots don't revolt against the haves. It's very prudent. It's very practical. So stealing is in the context of what is then maintaining a free society. So you're right. If your definition is just don't steal from me, you know what, then fine. Go live on a freaking island yourself.
Don't steal from anybody.
Great. And if you're going to say that taxation is stealing, then you don't even understand what the founding fathers created for us. The Constitution of the United States created the order that keeps you free. Period. That's it. You can disagree, but then go live in another country.
Good. Connor and then Rory. Either one. Doesn't matter. Good, Rory.
If you made that argument in a court of law, that you didn't pay your taxes because you thought it was stealing, you would go to jail. It's just that simple. And I don't understand the argument that it is acceptable for you to make a decision about which federal laws should be enforced as an individual and which shouldn't.
I have no problem with taxation to the extent that the governed have given their consent. I think we fundamentally lack that in our systems of government.
You're saying that's a problem, because the majority would say that.
I'm speaking. In a recent conversation with Paul, he supported in one of the cities in Utah, Highland Sunday Blue Law, or whatever it's called, affirming that the majority of the people in that city should have the ability to have that decision and enforce the community standard that they wanted. I find that to be the tyranny of the majority, right along the lines of taxation, whereby the majority can simply impose whatever edict and fund it with whatever taxes they want. It has to go back both to the consent of the governed and the underlying legitimacy of the policy being promoted.
Okay, we could go on forever, and unfortunately our time is up, and so we need to let them give their final remarks. So would you like to start, Rory, this time?
I started to say, and I just want to repeat it, that, you know, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to have spent some time with my colleagues and with you. I think it's good for the LDS Church to be perceived as something that isn't a monolithic political block. And I wouldn't make the argument that it's an institution that's diverse. But it is more diverse than it used to be. And there are different political philosophies amongst those that are adherents to the church. And I think that's good for you to recognize, and it's good for us to remind ourselves. And ultimately, you know, I think I'm right, so I'm going to leave here and feel good about myself. But I hope that you've had an opportunity to, you know, look into the mind of somebody that thinks maybe much different than you and achieved at least a little bit of understanding. And if you didn't, yeah, you can walk me to my car. Thanks a lot.
The Mormon faith is based on certain key fundamentals, one of which is the concept of moral agency, not free agency, as Paul rightly noted, the unrestrained ability to make our own decisions and be held accountable for them. We believe that God's plan of saving his children and allowing them to return to his eternal glory is predicated upon this agency, such that individuals may choose whether or not to obey him. When Adam was placed into the Garden of Eden, he was taught God's law and made to understand the various choices he might make. After telling Adam what he could and could not do, God said that thou mayest choose for thyself. Even when disastrous decisions might negatively impact another person, God respects our agency and allows the consequences to unfold. How arrogant of mankind to intervene so often and play God and attempt to restrict another's agency or to force a person to behave a certain way, perhaps to avoid certain consequences. This alternative was Satan's counterfeit proposal to God's plan of salvation. Satan was and is the polar opposite of peace and persuasion, ruling instead by coercion and control. This dichotomy between contrasting personalities was expressed well in the following quote by one of our church's leaders. The spirit of contention between God's and Satan's followers has come down to us through the ages, one side contending for individual liberty and the rights of man, and the other side contending for rule by force and by compulsion. That was essentially the issue in that great conflict before the world was. Christ stood for government by persuasion, by long-suffering, by kindness and gentleness and love unfeigned. The other power was for government and salvation for all to be secured by the spirit of force and compulsion. End quote. Libertarianism, more than any other political philosophy in existence, upholds government by persuasion and the protection of individual liberty and the rights of man. Conservatism and liberalism each resort to government ruling by the spirit of force and compulsion in their varying areas of interest, content to mandate compliance to their preferred societal standard and imprison those who resist. But the agency of man, the ability to make choices and reap the consequences, is as necessary to live morally and righteously as it is to live wickedly. If even God won't force his children to obey his commandments and adhere to his moral order, then what right do we have to force one another to do so? Thank you.
Thank you.
I think I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Connor didn't finish that scripture he quoted about the agency of man, and for it is
but remember that thou forbid it.
No, you can choose freely for yourself, because it's been given unto thee, and that's why order precedes liberty. I just wanted to show these puzzles to you here, if I may. This is conservatism. It's complete, has all of its pieces, and it reflects an accurate view of the world. Here's liberalism. It has all the same pieces, but because of their ideology and using government coercion, it's just all over the place. These pieces don't even really reflect the accurate view. Here is libertarianism.
Come on.
For the pieces that it has, it reflects it accurately, but it's just one small part of a much bigger world that they don't seem to understand. Thank you.
Thank you all, gentlemen, and thank you all for being here.